Okay, hi everybody. This is the 9/11 and other Deep State Times teleconference for the 31st of August 2016. Ken Freeland and Cheryl Curtis, facilitating, and Craig McKee, secretary, who will now call the roll. Go ahead, Craig.
Okay, so I'll read the names I have already written down, and anybody that's missing can just let me know. Craig McKee, Wayne Madsen, Barry Zwicker, Adam Ruff, Ken Freeland, Cheryl Curtis, Nita Renfrew, Frank Palopko, Kat McGuire, John O'Malley, Dave Schlesinger, Pablo Novi, Jim Fetzer, Roger Borys, David Cole, Wayne Costi, Dennis Cimino, and Barbara Honegger. Did I miss anyone?
Pardon, Bruce?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, Barton. Yes. You were right at the beginning, too. Sorry about that.
And Ed Jewett.
Ed Jewett. Okay, great.
So
okay,
how many do you have? What's your total?
I have 1, 2, 3. I have 20.
Perfect. We're good to go. Thank you. The first item on our agenda, as always, is approving the minutes of the previous teleconference as circulated by Craig. Craig, in the bottom part where you said that the audio of the, you said the June, but you meant July, so I think I'll correct that on my own. There's no need to send me a corrected version, okay?
Okay. Yeah, I always take the previous month one and just update it, but I missed one word. Sorry about that.
Okay. Any other amendments to the minutes before we approve them? Hearing none, then we'll take the minutes as approved in the draft and move on to considering tonight's draft agenda. Let's see. I have an additional item I would like to request that we add to it. Since the time of publishing the draft agenda, I've been in touch with Fran Shore, who's just made another milestone accomplishment of broadcasting on public television the Demolition of Truth video. And I would like us to spend about 5 to 10 minutes, and she may be on the call tonight if she can make it, talking about how we might support her efforts there, since she's established such an important beachhead. So if there's no objection, I'd like a 5 to 10 minute floating item that will take up as soon as Fran joins the call at the first opportunity. Is there an objection to adding that item? Okay, hearing no objections, then we'll add that item to the minutes. Are there any other amendments to the minutes?
The agenda. Yeah, I had asked for 2 minutes. I'm just asking for 1 minute. I want to give people an opportunity to know how to discourage me from effectively from actually becoming an adversary of AE 9/11 Truth. Mm-hmm. 1 minute.
When did you ask for the 2 minutes, David?
When I emailed you, and you responded by suggesting compassion was needed for my burnout.
No, that was that response had nothing to do with the request from you. That was a response to a major mailing you made to the number of people. Anyway, so you would like to add to the agenda a 1 minute opportunity to ask people to dissuade you from an action that you have planned. Is that correct?
No action. Just my own personal activity, not an action.
Okay, to dissuade you from your action, your activity, to dissuade you from your activity. Okay.
Right.
Is there any objection to David having a minute to ask us to dissuade him from his action, from his activity?
I object.
Point
of
clarification, would that include board time for discussion or not?
I don't mind discussion, and I don't insist on it.
No, I'm asking Tim.
Well, no, he's only asking for a minute, so I don't think that would leave much time for discussion. Apparently, he just wants to make a statement and give people contact information.
I object to that. This is Cheryl.
Okay. Cheryl. So there's an objection, so we'll have to vote on this item. David, you can have 30 seconds to explain why you want to put it on there. We'll give Cheryl an opportunity to easily argue for 30 seconds, and then we'll put it to a vote. Go ahead, David.
Well, I'm concerned that AE 911 Truth employs people who are dishonest. They use fraudulent means for fundraising. They're not concerned any longer with building a movement. And I am seriously considering going to adversaries to assist in embarrassing them publicly for these things. And I want people to understand how they could effectively intervene with me directly and having a conversation before I make a decision to do that.
Thank you. Okay, that's 30 seconds. And Cheryl, you have 30 seconds.
It feels to me like what David is doing is he's got some kind of a grudge or something going on with AE, and he's using our conference call to air that, and I don't think that's appropriate.
Hear, hear.
Okay, so we've heard a pro and a con argument. We'll now put it to a vote. We'll try a voice vote and see how that works. If it's too close, then we'll have to do a roll call vote on it. So all in favor of allowing David's item onto the agenda, say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed, say nay.
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 Well, it's too close, so we'll have to do a roll call vote. Greg?
Okay.
This is Wayne. A question. How does this differ?
Yes.
How does this differ from him just getting his contact number and we're done with the item?
It needs a little more explanation.
Got it. You just gave the explanation.
Okay,
but
he said he's asking for a minute. We have to accept that he's asking for a minute. So please, Craig, take the roll, and we'll just as quickly as possible.
Okay. Wayne Costi?
Yes.
Yes. Barry Zwicker?
Nay.
Adam Ross?
Aye.
Ken Freeland, do you vote only in a tie, Ken?
Yes, only in a tie.
Okay. Cheryl Curtis?
No.
Okay. Nita Renfrew?
Nay.
Frank Talopko?
Abstain.
Okay. Kat McGuire?
Nay.
John O'Malley?
Abstain.
Okay, Dave Schlesinger would be a yes. Pablo?
Waterley Simone.
What does that mean?
Sorry? Yes, what does that mean?
That means yes.
Okay.
Swahili.
Right. Jim Fetzer.
Sorry. Yes.
Roger Borey.
Yes.
David Cole.
Yes.
Wayne Madsen.
No.
Dennis Cimino.
I didn't hear what Wayne's vote was.
Was that I took it as a no, did I?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. Dennis?
Yeah.
Barbara?
No.
Barton?
Yes.
Ed?
No.
No, I will say no as well. So now I'm going to add this up because it's not clear to me yet. Okay, give me a second. I have 9 yeses. I have 9 yeses, 9 noes, and 2.
I found 10 yeses.
Okay, I've got something wrong here because I need 20 altogether and I didn't count 10, so I should have 19 votes.
I got 10 yeses.
Let me count the yeses. Let me count the yeses again here. I've got, okay, for yeses, I've got Wayne Costi, Adam Ruff, that's 2, Dave Schlesinger is 3, Pablo is 4, Jim is 5, Roger is 6, David is 7, Dennis is 8, and Barton is 9. That's what I have.
This is taking longer than giving him the minute would have taken. And
well,
people should just reply to him offline by email or phone or whatever. And it would have been shorter. The whole thing would have been shorter. This is silly.
Indeed,
it would have.
Yeah. Cat was in the no category. So
yes,
once again, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay, I'm now showing 8 no's. So 9 yeses, 8 no's, and 2 abstentions. So it's
there are 2 more people.
The no's carry, or the yeses carry.
What are we voting on?
There are 2 more people on the conference this week.
Cat, what are we voting on?
There's
actually 3 more people on the teleconference now. Bill Wilt is here, Jim Shepherd is here, Susan Serpa and Richard Coyne are here.
Okay, hold
so
on.
So I'll pose the question to their vote. You each have 1 vote on this question. Would you like to hear a minute from David Schlesinger about his concern about AE911 Truth and why he should... and how people might dissuade him from acting in a way to counter his concerns with AE911 Truth or not? It's just a question
of whether... That's not exactly right. That's not a proper way to describe it. So.
Yeah. It's stronger than
David,
that.
David. All right. David, for the record, David, in a very short way, please. Very short. What is your... State it for, as a resolution.
I'm concerned that an AE911 Truth staffer is a police agent.
No, dishonest. No, you don't.
And I want people to be able to...
I'm going to cut you off, David. I'm cutting you off. The question is whether or not you want to hear an explanation from David as to whether his action against AE911 Truth should proceed. Okay? Do you want the item on the agenda or
not?
You're asking for 1 minute. Well, that's all right. That's how I'm going to do it. If you want to challenge it, David, you can. Okay? That's how I'm going to state it, for the record. Now, 4 people have a vote. Susan Serpa, how do you vote? Do you want the item on the agenda or not?
Yes.
Okay, so Bill Wilt, do you want it on the agenda or not?
Yes, please.
Okay. Richard Coyne?
Yes.
Who else is on? Jane Tufford?
Yes.
And I'm missing 1 person that arrived late. Who's that?
You gave me 4 new ones there, Ken.
Okay, well, anyway, that should settle the issue. So we now got the votes to put on the agenda. So we'll put 1 minute at the end of the agenda, and David will have his minute to make his case. So let's move on now to... our first item on the agenda for tonight. I'm sorry. Are there any other amendments to the agenda? Okay. Hearing none, then we'll move on to our first item. And, gosh, now I have to bring that back up again. Isn't that our feature presentation with Wayne Matson?
Yes, that was next. Yes,
it is. Okay. Thank you. So Cheryl Curtis was eager beaver this month, and she was... successful in bringing Wayne to the call for this important review of his book. And so Cheryl will introduce him. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Okay. I don't think that Wayne probably needs an introduction for this group, but just in case. Wayne Matson is a Washington, D.C.-based investigative journalist, author, and columnist with 35 years' experience in security issues. His military intelligence background includes work as an analyst at the NSA, editor of WayneMatsonReport.com. Wayne has written on the diplomatic pedophilia ring in the U.S. Embassy in Bangkok, the laundering of Sheldon Adelson's casino money from Macau to the Romney campaign, and has traveled to Libya to report on the NATO bombing campaign. So, Wayne, welcome, and thanks for coming on tonight, and let's hear what you have to say.
Welcome,
hi.
Wayne. Glad to have you.
Thank you. Can everyone hear me okay? Because I've got you on my speaker, and I just want to make sure everyone can hear me.
I hear
okay?
Loud and clear.
Okay,
yep.
Good. Well, I'm going to give you kind of a thumbnail sketch of what I'm going to be talking about in New York in a couple of weeks, or I guess a week and a half now. Basically, it's, where did the Islamic State come from? The book is called Unmasking ISIS, The Shocking Truth, which I co-authored with the George Washington blog. And the essence of the book is that the Islamic State did not have to be created had it not been for policy decisions made in the United States, in Saudi Arabia, in Turkey, and in Israel primarily. And so we had the United States in Iraq as a occupying authority. General David Petraeus was the commander of Central Command, CENTCOM, and under his watch, we had the rise of Al-Qaeda in Iraq, something that would have been not possible under Saddam Hussein's rule. And Al-Qaeda in Iraq was headed up by first a guy named Zarqawi, and then a guy named Omar al-Baghdadi. There's strong evidence based on statements of Iraqis and U.S. military personnel that both of these individuals were made-up personalities, that they never existed. So Al-Qaeda in Iraq nested itself in primarily in Anbar province in western Iraq. When Secretary of State Clinton, with some of her regime change advocates, decided to overthrow secular, traditionally pan-Arab socialist governments in Libya, Egypt, and Syria, we saw what essentially was Al-Qaeda in Iraq use the disruption in Syria to create a new group called the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant or Al-Sham. So that's why you have ISIL and then also ISIS. In Arabic, the concatenation is called Daesh or Daesh, which John Kerry likes to use that term. Barack Obama likes to use ISIL, and everyone else seems to like to use ISIS. I think there's a reason why they can't agree even on what to call this group, is because so many people were involved in creating it, they couldn't even get their stories straight. While all this was going on, we had President Recep Tayyip Erdogan in Turkey deciding to crown himself as the neo-Ottoman Sultan, and he immediately started supporting ISIS in Syria with military and logistics help. In return, his son was had a monopoly on selling oil from ISIS-occupied oil fields in Syria on the open market, which provided them ready cash. We had then General Petraeus making a statement that the U.S. should ally itself with Al-Qaeda in Syria against ISIS. The problem is that he was trying to suggest there's a difference between the two. There's also the CIA suggesting that Jabhat al-Nusra, the al-Nusra Front, although they had links to Al-Qaeda in Syria, we should support them because they were our allies against ISIS and the Assad government. Israel, on the other hand, we just had a statement by the Begin Sadat Center in Israel saying that ISIS is actually good for Israel and they should never be destroyed. They should be kept around because they're a good counter against Shia groups, for example, Hezbollah, the government of Syria, and the government of Iran.
Excuse me just a second, Wayne. Someone has noise going on in the background here, so it's very important. If you can star six your phone, you can star six to come back in later for the conversation, but you really don't need the background noise. Okay, so star six, please, everybody. Star six, and that will use the background noise. I'm sorry, Wayne. Please proceed.
No problem. Let's remember what happened after 9/11. We saw the Patriot Act passed in this country. We saw other measures taken internationally that said, look, we We've got to get this terrorism under control. Many of us sacrificed our many privacy rights, rights to travel, rights to secure, you know, to secure financial transactions. All that was sacrificed by Americans and people abroad in this so-called global war against terror. Now, what we've seen because of U.S., Turkish, Saudi, and Israeli support primarily for the what I would call Al-Qaeda II, which is now the Islamic State, is Chancellor Merkel and George Soros and others welcomed many migrants, including many members of the Islamic State into Europe via Turkey. They first made landfall on the Greek islands. They're still making landfall on the Greek islands. They made their way through the Balkans into Austria, Germany, and elsewhere in Europe, large cities and even small villages. And we've seen the effect of that. Terrorist attacks in Brussels and Paris, on trains in Germany and in Austria and all over Europe. And we've also seen this play out with ISIS affiliates in the United States, the massacre in San Bernardino, the more recent one in Orlando, and more isolated ones around the country. And just also there was a recent case in Canada that was aborted. So the issue is ISIS did not form in a vacuum. It was formed as a result of willful policy decisions made in our country in Washington, D.C. And the criminals involved in creating this terrorist group include not only David Petraeus, who was not only CENTCOM, but he was the CIA director, and he is a convicted felon, by the way. But also Secretary of State Clinton and her top advisors and people in Europe, Merkel, and who allowed ISIS to make its bridgehead in on the European continent. And there's many lesser players, but these people made the decision to create this terrorist group from the foundation of Al-Qaeda, the group that we say, I mean, I don't say it, but the 9/11 Commission said it, that this group was responsible for the 9/11 attacks has been allowed to continue in other forms. And not just the ones I mentioned, the groups I mentioned, but Ansar Dine, Boko Haram. There were terrible massacres and attacks in Africa. They don't get the type of attention in the press that in Orlando or San Bernardino or Paris or Brussels get. But just as many people in some cases have died in terrorist attacks, especially in Western African capitals. So this is a plague that has affected many parts of the world. But those who are responsible for the continuation of Al-Qaeda in another form are, I believe, criminally responsible for the hundreds and hundreds of deaths we've seen since 9/11, and I believe they should be held criminally accountable for their actions, and that does include the Democratic nominee for President of the United States.
And I'll comment.
Think is there already?
Wayne, I want to compliment you on your book. I have published on this subject myself. An article entitled How We Know ISIS Was Made in the USA, published in Iran Review. More recently, a presentation at the Left Forum on exactly the same subject, which was a video presentation as opposed to a written one. And since Judicial Watch was able, under Freedom of Information Act request, to obtain the documents that show the Defense Intelligence Agency had established ISIS in 2012, I presume you agree that since Hillary was Secretary of State from 2009 to 2013, Barack Obama in office since 2008, that when Donald Trump suggests that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama were the founders of ISIS, that he's essentially right on target.
Well, yeah, it's the problem, of course, Trump, he says things, but he doesn't articulate what he says very well. And the DIA, of course, memo was mentioned by the former director of the Defense Intelligence Agency, General Mike Flynn, who, of course, has endorsed Trump for president, one of the few military types who has come out. I believe it's because in his position as the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency, he was having a deal with the decisions made by the State Department and the Central Intelligence Agency under Petraeus for part of the time, and then under John Brennan, in every decision he opts to support the Saudi line, the Turkish line, and generally the Muslim Brotherhood / Salafist / Wahhabist line in the Middle East. And this is the religious underpinnings of the Islamic State. They are not Shia, certainly. The Shias are their sworn enemies, and they're not what we see now, an attempt to by the Turkish government to blame the recent coup on Fethullah Gulen. Gulen is basically a Sufi. That's a very, relatively moderate form of Islam. You see Sufi traditions in the whirling dervishes they have in Turkey. They believe in goats. They have saints. This is all against Wahhabist and Salafist religious ideology. So this is an attempt to eliminate yet another moderating force in the Middle East, as represented by Fethullah Gulen, who Joe Biden recently told Erdogan, in Turkey, that that the United States is working on extraditing Gulen back to Turkey, to where he probably faced execution.
Let me just add how much I admire your work, which I frequently cite, Wayne. You're doing a great job, and it's a bloody shame that we have so few investigative journalists of your quality in America anymore.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the kind words.
Okay, thanks.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, you can, Barbara. Does anybody else have a question that they would like to ask of Wayne?
James.
Okay, so Barbara, James, who else?
Nita.
Pablo.
Nita, who else?
Pablo.
Pablo, who else? Huh?
Chat.
Roger. Roger, who else? Roger. I got you, Roger.
Cat.
Who else?
Cat.
Who else?
Yes.
Huh? Is somebody else besides Cat? Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right, so I've got six people that want to ask questions. You need to keep your questions to less than 30 seconds because we're way behind time now. So, Barbara, you can go first. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks. Thanks so much for all of your work. It's fantastic, Wayne. I have two questions really quick. The first is, could you tell us something about your co-author? That's an easy one. The harder one is, can you try to explain to us in a nutshell why Israel and the United States are so against Iran and against the Shiites in the Middle East? Why do we take a side of the Sunnis? Thank you.
Yeah. I actually tell you the truth, that George Washington's blog is like a pseudonym. I'm not really sure who that person is myself. I mean, he certainly does want to be identified, but there's many reasons why people use nom de plume. In some cases, people that work in the government that don't want to suffer the repercussions of being identified, but I didn't make it a requirement that I needed to know exactly who the person was. But as to the Iran, and this was
I'm sorry, I missed something at the beginning. Are you saying you don't know who your co-author is?
Well, he uses the handle George Washington's blog, I assume. From what I know.
Oh, I see.
He's in the Washington.
You don't give his name.
I know his name.
I know his identity, Wayne. But I agree that he prefers not to be identified. But his blog is exceptional, and I think it's an extraordinary combination of you and he working together.
Right.
Okay.
Thank you. And the other question.
As to Iran, my take after I was there in Tehran for a week is that I don't know. A lot of it has to do with what happened with the Iranian, the U.S. Embassy situation in 1979, but it's quite clear that, to me, that Iran is actually a moderating influence in the Middle East. Shia is nowhere close on the scale of radicalism that Wahhabist and Salafist ideology is, and that's represented, of course, mostly by Saudi Arabia, but increasingly by Erdogan in Turkey, and in Qatar, and in Bahrain, and the United Arab Emirates. It's hard to sell Iran because it's been decades of that country being demonized, mostly by the neocons who predominated in Washington. But I mentioned Sufi Islam. Shia Islam is full of Sufi influence. So by nature, the ideology is
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're so short on time that I have to ask you to keep your answers brief as well, okay?
Okay.
I think that answered it very well.
Shia Islam is fairly moderate as opposed to what they practice in the South, Saudi Arabia.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Let's see.
Yeah, thank you. I don't think the question was
that's
answered,
enough, Barbara. Barbara, we need to go on to others. Thank you, Barbara. Okay,
sure.
And the next one is...
Hey, Ken, just to let you know, this is Fran. I just got on.
Who is?
Fran. Fran Tour.
Fran. Hi. Okay, we'll be taking your issue up very shortly, okay? We're just ending up our questions with Wayne Madsen, and then we'll go into that issue, okay?
Okay, I'm fine.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Welcome, Fran. Okay, the next person was James. Go ahead, James.
Okay, this is not directly related, but do you have any insight into the alleged culpability of Hillary Clinton into the murder recently of Seth Rich and other associated murders recently?
Well, I think Julian Assange of WikiLeaks has indicated that he had a source in the DNC. But we really don't know yet who it is. But I initially thought that Seth Rich's, because of where it was located at the time of night, it was just a normal, unfortunately, a normal robbery in Washington, D.C. But when the police said that nobody took his wallet or his watch and he had been beaten before he was shot in the back, I think that the robbery motives flew out the window.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Nina, you're next.
Yeah, I couldn't hear part of what you said when you were talking about that the Israelis wanted the Shiites around, or they wanted Al-Qaeda around, and then you said you were giving a reason, but there was a lot of interference at that moment.
Well, the Begin Sadat Center, which is very close to the Netanyahu government, recently made a statement that the Islamic State was useful for Israel's policies because it was a counter to the Shia influence, mostly Hezbollah, Syria, and Iran, and that they preferred to keep the Islamic State around. Now, it's also known that they had provided medical assistance and logistics and other support to the jihadists fighting in Syria against Assad.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. I followed the Israeli Bassi situation for many years, and the main reason, one of the reasons that nobody ever mentions that they want to get rid of the Assad regime is because it's a Bassi ideology, which is the same as what was Saddam Hussein's was, and that is a pan-Arab ideology, and they just don't want that to come back.
That's
what I
want. That's your
to
comment.
Say.
Thank you. Okay, Pablo?
Yeah, Wayne, I'm wondering, are you saying that ISIS is the author of the attacks in the United States as opposed to them just being U.S. government false flags like Boston and other ones? You're saying they are now doing these?
Well, you know, if you preface it with the fact that the United States helped create ISIS, it's not a huge leap to figure out that the U.S. Helped create this group that has been carrying out these attacks. And I know the FBI has been involved in trapping people. But there's also people that actually believe in the ISIS ideology. They do this because they believe in it. So I don't think one can separate the Wahhabist, Salafist ideology from some of the attackers. They're true believers in it. Now, who's been funding them and nurturing them? You know, we had several that have gone over to Syria through Turkey and returned back to the United States and Europe and carried out these attacks. So, of course, there's culpability by many of the governments in Europe and the U.S. government in these attacks.
Okay.
Gladio B.
Yep.
Gladio B.
Yeah, okay. And Roger, you next.
Mine was similar to Pablo's, I believe, in a sense I heard Wayne mention twice San Bernardino, and my research shows that blatantly a false flag event. And so, I don't know Wayne's source of information on that, but I'm happy to share it with Wayne and others, just from what we can see on YouTube, et cetera, that it's fairly blatantly false flag.
Well, all I'll say is there was a Pakistani husband and wife team that carried out the attacks. Now, there's people who are trying to say that, oh, no, these aren't Muslims doing this. Yes, they are. Let's get real. I've defended the Muslims for a long time. But
I believe
these
that
attacks, I don't think you can say, well, it's a guy named Joe Schmo that does it. You know, they do have the same names. They do have the same ideology. They do have the same ethnic background.
Roger, I think that's as far as we can go with that right now, but you're welcome to put that on the agenda for a future teleconference if you want to pursue it, okay?
I've done research on San Bernardino, and there's no question it was a comprised.
Jim, you're out of Jim. Yeah, thank you.
I was just saying, further.
Okay. And Kat, you're the last on the list. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. It's really clear that the West set these tasks, well, these people who believe in some of them are psychotic, but as far as actual behind-the-scenes masterminds, I'm just wondering how deeply Israel is as opposed to the U.S. in that supposedly the six Netanyahu has visited them in hospitals, al-Baghdadi supposedly an Israeli. To what extent do you think that the Israelis have more the upper hand, if you will, more of the control of these public-facing, psychotic kind of forces?
Well, I think it depends on the battlefield you're talking about. I think the Israelis are very active in Syria and what's going on there as far as their support for the jihadists. And that includes Jabhat al-Nusra, al-Qaeda in Syria, and the Islamic State. And over here, the Obama administration tries to insist that there's a difference between these groups. I agree with Assad. They're all jihadists. The Russians have said that as well. The Iranians have said that, and I think they're right. Of course, we try to make it sound like there's a big difference, and I don't think there is. Now when you get into attacks in the United States and Europe, it's not as clear that there's a direct Israeli link, but definitely in Syria there's an Israeli link. When you get into Europe, I think the links are almost point more to the Turks And of course, there's just been a rapprochement between Turkey, Erdogan, and Netanyahu. So that may actually cause more problems in the long run. They're on the same page now where they weren't for several years.
Okay, well, I guess if you want more information, you're going to have to read Wayne's book. And Wayne, where can people get the book?
Well, they can get it from my website, WayneMatchReport.com. And they'll see the link there. I think it's available on all the usual suspects, Amazon and the rest of the online booksellers.
Okay. Well, we certainly want to take this opportunity to thank you for spending the time with us tonight to enlighten us about the content of your new book, and we wish you well in your presentation in New York on September the 10th.
Okay.
Okay.
Hope to see a lot of you there. Okay.
Thanks, Wayne. Thanks again.
Bye.
Okay, well, it's a great honor also to welcome to the teleconference Fran Schuer, probably somebody who shouldn't need an introduction to any activist on this call, but just in case you're not familiar with it, Fran is has been very active for many years with Colorado 9/11 Truth, and especially of note with the interface with Colorado Public TV Station 12. Most recently, they have managed to have broadcast the latest AE 9/11 Truth video, a demolition of truth, on the air as a fundraiser for the station and giving away premiums for subscription that are all 9/11 Truth classics, okay? This is a monumental achievement. And it is my thought, and Fran will hopefully tell us some of the particulars involved here, that we owe it to these folks who have worked so hard to get 9/11 Truth into the mainstream to support them by becoming members of the station if we can afford it, and if not, there are other things that can be done to help support them. But I just want to say in passing before I give the microphone to Fran that I consider her an absolute role model for the rest of us is the persistence and how to get things done in a very big way. So, Fran, thank you for joining us tonight. Can you tell people how you managed to achieve this remarkable feat and what people might be able to do from the outside who don't live in Colorado to help support this and why they might be called to do so.
Right. Thanks so much, Ken. And hi, everybody.
Hi,
everyone. This is actually the first time I've been on this call. Well, first of all, I'm going to just tell you the reality of the whole thing. And but first of all, also to say it's not an AE 9/11 Truth film. Architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth were supporting it at the beginning, but then they dropped back. And I think it's because it dealt with more than just the three buildings. So they're not really, it's not at all a 9/11 Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth video. It was done solely by Chuck Smith, who actually has quite a history of working in Hollywood as a sound person for different movies, films. I didn't know what a good resume he had until I actually saw it. It was really his baby. He did the whole thing, and Marty Hopper and I and several other people just gave him a lot of feedback. It's been in the works for months. We've been going through version after version and helping Chuck edit it and get it really tight, and so it flowed very well, and he's just done a remarkable job. I think it's an excellent film. So we were very lucky, you know, regarding Colorado Public Television, Channel 12. The reality is we are just very fortunate to have that station in our city and in Colorado. I was telling Ken last night, we didn't work any magic here. We're just extremely fortunate to have a station who get over 70% of their funding from individuals like all of us. And it gets the rest of its funding from other sources, some of it from corporations. But the vast majority of their funding comes from individuals. So they pay attention to the community. They pay attention to what the community wants. And how we managed to develop a relationship with them is we found out years ago that they needed someone to staff their phone banks. And so we said, and in trade for that, we got 2 minutes of airtime to talk about Colorado 9/11 Truth. And so we did that, and then that's how they learned about 9/11, about 9/11 Truth. And then the next film they showed, they finally showed a film, America Freedom to Fascism, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with, Aaron Russo's film. And so they said, well, this is a great fit. And so we went in and staffed the phone booth, and they offered 9/11 Press for Truth. And so a couple of us went and met with Sherry Burnson. She's a program developer and a producer there. And we said, listen, you offered this 9/11 Press for Truth as a gift. Why don't you consider showing it as a pledge drive? We think it'll do very well. And she did, and it did excellent. It was brought in a lot of money to the station, and the reason it did is because we just promote the heck out of it. We did everything we could to bring people to the station to watch it, and people were so grateful that they just contributed. And so they've been showing 9/11 Truth films ever since. So what Ken said last night to me was his idea was that, by the way, there's been a concerted effort around the nation. There's someone that worked for Architects and Engineers, her name is Yaz, who tried to get PBS stations around the country to show it. Some of them were almost ready to show it, and then at the last minute they pulled back. So, of course, this is not surprising, you know, to most of us, but that's what happened. So no other PBS station, no other broadcast station will show this material. So what Ken was saying to me is maybe we all just need to support Colorado Public Television and show the other stations how much money they can make, you know, really support them financially so that we can show the other PBS stations and they will find out how much money this little station made by showing this film. So that's kind of where we were. It was just a thought to pass along to people that if you want to do that, it would be fabulous because I'm working really hard to get the word out to people around the world, really. I want people around the world to watch this and to donate, even though they don't have the station in their country. It says a lot to CPT-12 that people are watching, they're listening, they're making comments on the station, and they are expressing their gratitude, and they're donating, even if it's just $5. You know, if you can't afford the $60 level, which is the first level, which is where you get the film, it gives a very, very strong message to Colorado Public Television. So just off the top of my head, that's my feel.
Let me just say two things in addition to what Fran has said here. The first one is that in addition to showing how much money it can raise for the station and therefore inducing other stations to consider taking this risk, it also insulates the person that they're working with at the station who has gone out on a limb to make this happen, okay? It shows that she's been successful when it raises a lot of money, and it helps to be sure that this can be done again. So that's why I think we owe it to Colorado 9/11 Truth to get in there and pitch in with whatever we can afford. And
yeah.
If you are someone who cannot afford anything, and I know that there are some of us who are dirt poor, another thing you can do is watch the video online at their site. And everybody should do that anyway, because this film is better than any other AE 9/11 Truth type film. I realize it's not actually under AE 9/11 Truth's direction, but it features a lot of similar players. And after you're done watching it, leave a comment. Leave a positive comment. Fran said that this is very important. They look at the comments, and that helps them gauge the effect of their broadcast. So that's something everybody can do, and I think everybody on this call should feel compelled to do at least that much, okay?
That was
whether
great.
You can afford the money or not.
They did very, very well. It was shown live Thursday night, the 25th of August. They told me that it did twice as well as Experts Speak Out financially.
Whoa.
Now,
whoa.
That's a big statement. And Ken is right. even the mission of the TV station of Colorado Public Television is to show material that's neglected, that's underrepresented or censored in the mainstream media. And it's also to open up discussions about these various subjects that they approach. And it's what the media should be doing, you know,
exactly.
Which most of the media does not do at all. But they're still doing it. And so, Sherry Burnson is really the driver for this. She's the program development director and producer there. And she has really gone out on a limb. People won't talk to her from other PBS stations. They snub her. But what they're finding out is how much money that they're making.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the people at the station are coming around and seeing that this is a serious subject and deserves attention. So I think, again, if people watch it, comment, just say, I can't afford anything, but thank you so much. And mm-hmm. Or if you can't afford it, make a pledge and that would be very, very helpful. So that's, I think, just all I can think to say.
Yeah,
right
all
now.
We need at this point, I think, is for the record, and this will go through the minutes, how do people access it in a way that will allow them to watch the video and then make whatever contribution they can.
Maybe, Ken, I should really give the link. I should just spell that out for
mm-hmm.
people.
Yep.
Because I don't know if it's better to go to their site or to the YouTube of it, but right now it's safer just to go to their site to watch it to give them credit
mm-hmm.
for it. And
mm-hmm.
that link is CP, as in Paul, T12.org. That's CPT12.org/. And you can find it if you scroll down far enough, you can find it on the home page, CPT12.org. And if you want to, you can go directly to the landing page, which is cpt12.org/911. That's 9/11. And that'll take you directly to the landing page.
Imagine that, a public television station with a 911 separate page.
They have a 911
page. That's incredible.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Please.
Okay, so I don't think we have a lot of time to take with this. The important thing here was to induce people to contribute and to help support this effort in Colorado. If you have anything to say on that question, on how we can help this cause, you may take a moment to say it. Otherwise, we need to thank Fran and move on because we're way behind time. Does anybody have a comment on the activism?
Who wants to speak?
Barbara and
Wilt.
Who else? Barbara and Wilt, and who else?
Dave Schlesinger. Okay. I only need 10 seconds.
Barbara, Bill, and David. Okay, Barbara, you first.
Yeah, I just like people to know, and can I go ahead?
Yes, please make
can
it
I go
quick.
Ahead?
Go ahead.
Okay,
go ahead. Please make it quick.
Yeah, I will. I always do. I just want people. Yes, I do. I want people to know that at the DC 9/11 conference, which is what now, what, 3 or 4 years ago, at my request, Sherry Berenson, who is this hero, was given the 9/11 Truth Mainstream Media Award, and so we have recognized her at our 9/11 Truth conference. So. I just wanted people to know that, and maybe we could do something like that again at the conference in New York City. I'll talk to Les about it.
Great. Thank you, Barbara. And Bill?
Okay, I would suggest, in addition to the letter or friendly comments, you might comment as I did. I used to be a member at $60 of WGBH in Boston and WBUR in Boston. They have done absolutely nothing to support 9/11 troops. So I would say, I'm contributing this to you, and I'm also letting the folks that I used to contribute to in my own backyard, I am withdrawing my support from them since they are not supporting the rights of we the people.
That's a great strategy,
great strategy. Thank you. David?
Yes, Fran, I will email you. I don't need to have the time right now.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. Right. And Bill, that's a great idea. I'd say let your local stations know why you're not contributing more, and let CPT-12 know why you're contributing to them, you know. And they will, that will speak very loudly to them.
Mm-hmm. Get that beret.
There you
Thank you so much, Fran, for joining us tonight. I've got stuff I really have to do, so thank you very much, Ken.
Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, that brings us to our next item, which is the size of the hole in the Pentagon wall, Wayne Custis.
Excuse me, is David Cole going to be the next one?
Oh, I beg your pardon. Thank you for reminding me. Yes, David Cole is going to give us an update on the lawyers for 9/11 inquiry, justice in focus panel discussion. David?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, help.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I don't have anything formal here, and maybe Barbara can help me out because she's on the lawyers team call also, and she's probably a lot more articulate about this than I am. This is really just designed for your questions. I think most of you are probably aware of the Justice in Focus weekend on the 10th and 11th of September coming up. The 10th is Les Jamison's production day, and the 11th is the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry panel discussion, and they have a lot of interesting people that are going to be sitting and presenting evidence to the lawyers panel. I really don't understand exactly what they're doing, but I think that it's sort of like a citizen's grand jury, maybe an informal citizen grand jury. Maybe, Barbara, can you help me out here explain more in detail?
Yeah, because I think the big picture is important. The most important thing for people to know is the website to go to, because if you just put in Justice in Focus, New York City, you're not going to get to the detailed website. So the website you want to go to, which is for just for the conference, is 911justiceinfocus.org. You want to be sure and go to that and click on the speakers and the schedule in the horizontal menu at the top to get the photographs and detailed bios about all of the incredible speakers on the 2 days, September 10th and 11th, Saturday and Sunday. So, you know, Les Jamison really would need to speak more in more detail to the Saturday conference, which is an entirely separate event organized by Les and his group in New York City versus the Sunday event, which is being coordinated by the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry, which I will be speaking at. And so I can really speak to the Sunday, September 11th event. Both events are at historic Cooper Union Great Hall. You will see the photo of that amazing venue where Abraham Lincoln accepted the nomination for president back in a few centuries ago. The end of 2 centuries ago. And so it's a very historic venue, and we believe that Sunday especially will be a very historic turning point for the movement. And the reason is that it's not really a grand jury. In fact, the question is whether the evidence for the World Trade Centers 1, 2, and 7, and the focus will just be on the World Trade Center, not anything else for this event, whether the evidence presented by Richard Gage and Graham McQueen and David Chandler, and I believe also maybe Kevin Ryan, the leaders in the movement on World Trade Center 1, 2, and 7, will be presenting their best evidence, their best forensic evidence, to a panel of truly world-renowned attorneys and judges, and a judge. So Judge Imposimoto, who was the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Italy, I personally invited him, and he accepted, and then his acceptance we were able to leverage, and I used that acceptance to personally invite Daniel Sheehan, who is famous for many, many cases that he won, including being the New York Times lead, one of the lead attorneys for Pentagon Papers case in New York, for the New York Times, Karen Silkwood case, the Ron Ponce case, American Sanctuary case, movement case during the El Salvador, you know, attacks on civilians. So anyway, and then we're also going to have William Pepper as the MC. So we have three truly world-renowned attorneys and a former justice of the Supreme Court of Italy who will be there to listen to the evidence that Richard Gage and Graham McLean and the others present. And then they and additional panel members, including myself, will be responding as to whether we believe that the evidence is sufficient to present to a grand jury, a real grand jury, and or to what other venues, both internationally, U.S., Canada, whatever, there will be a discussion of what legal venues would be the best and the most likely to bring the real perpetrators to justice. So it's really a turning point event for making the legal rubber grip the road for 9/11 truth. That's it.
Anything else, David?
No, if anybody has any questions, maybe we could answer them.
Okay, so we've got a couple of minutes to take questions. If anybody has any, anybody would like to ask a question of David or Barbara?
Adam, I would like to ask your question.
Okay, Adam, anybody else? Okay, good. Adam, your floor is yours.
Hi, David. I understand that you're going to be focusing on the World Trade Center, but if I can suggest that for future consideration, you watch an excellent film about the Pentagon called National Security Alert, I think you'll find that the evidence is very compelling for what we're talking about at the Pentagon as well. So maybe that's something you can take up with the lawyers group at a later time. Just wanted to make that comment.
Okay.
I have a quick question.
I should add it, Barb. This is important. I should add that when you go to 911justiceinfocus.org, you scroll down or maybe in the menu, horizontal menu at the top, you can purchase tickets for the actual event, which will begin at 10 a.m. in the morning both days and go to about 6:30 p.m. both days, Saturday and Sunday, September 10th and 11th. But also, you can, it will be streamed live by Alan Reese of No Lies Radio. So at 7 a.m. West Coast time, 10 a.m. East Coast, at different times and different time zones across the country, live, you can go to nolifesradio.org and for a very nominal fee, $10, $15, I don't remember, you will get a ticket to watch it live both weekend days. So that's very exciting. It will be archived, but you still have to buy a ticket. Watch the archived video, I think, for something like 2 to 3 months.
What's the price of admission in New York, Barbara?
You'll have to go to the website to see. It's very nominal.
$30.
$30 for both days, I believe.
It's higher.
Mm, $35 for both days, for $25 for each day.
That is pretty nominal, yeah, okay. All right, so David, did you want to respond to Adam's comment at all?
No, I just have a question. Quick question.
No, not David Schlesinger, David Cole. David Cole, did you want to respond to Adam's question?
I mean, he didn't ask a question, he was just...
His comment, did you want to respond to his comment at all?
No, I mean, we're aware that, CIT has done some important work, and but the lawyers committee has an enormous job in front of it, and there's only so much that they can do. You have to be fair to them. It's a small committee, so they're trying to build foundation and attract new members, and maybe it'll get to the point where they can start covering every aspect of 9/11, but the World Trade Center 7 and the towers are right at the top of the list at this point. That's just the way it is.
Okay. Thank you. David, did you say you had a question?
Yes. Quick question. I'm hoping you folks will raise with the legal team, even if they don't deal with it until after this event, if they would consider honoring their founder, Susan Watkins, at some point, in some way. Would someone raise it with them?
I will raise it with them on the
Great.
Next organizing call.
Thank you so much.
I think they are going to address that. They're going to make some kind of a statement, I think, at the beginning.
Great.
Excellent. Okay. All right. Well, thank you, David and Barbara, for the update. And let's move on now to their next item, which is Wayne Costi's presentation on the hole in the Pentagon wall. Go ahead, David. Wayne.
Great. Thank you so much. First of all, I want to let the people know that they can get a copy of the presentation if they don't have it by going to a website, hopeoutloud.org/Pentagon. hopeoutloud.org/Pentagon. It's the top item there. And so what I wanted to do here was respond to the comments that I heard at the last teleconference where people were insisting that the size of the hole was 20 feet and that was too small for anything except maybe a missile. But in fact, the hole of first floor is open for 100 feet, and it's really obvious if you actually stop and take a look. I know in an email exchange I had today with Adam, he's clarified that of course everyone knows that the top the 20 feet is on the opening is on the second floor, but all the conversations I keep hearing is that the wall is basically intact except for this 20 feet. So what I'd like to do is go through this presentation. I'm going to talk only about the wall, and I'm hoping that when it comes to the Q&A that Ken will teach everyone on the specific topic of the size of the hole and the evidence and the images. And yep. So I'll be responding because I'll be going through that. Slide 2 is the table of contents. I'm going to go through what the wall looks like. This an assertion that it's a blast-resistant wall, but in fact, it's just not much more than Jenga blocks, and we're going to take a look at that with blast-resistant windows, and the wall crumbles when it collapses. Everything you need to know about it is on the ground. We're going to talk about a little bit about the conflicting claims, composite photos. Then we're going to look at the hole, starting with the south end, going to the north end, and then we're going to focus on the hanging remnants of column 16. So going on to slide 3, the purpose of the presentation is basically to illustrate the evidence supporting the exterior wall that was comprised of many concrete blocks. That when you look at the images, you'll see that they are, in fact, not super reinforced as when they connect to other things, other parts of the structure. And there's a continuous opening that exists in the first floor of the Pentagon facade that's approximately 100 feet wide and extends from column 8 to 18. No other aspects of the Pentagon event is being discussed here. Slide 4 is just an introduction to the Jenga block wall. Slide 5 talks about what is visible in the post-collapse wall photographs. All the components of the wall are clearly visible in the post-collapse photos. You can see the limestone exterior sheathing, the bricks, the concrete wall blocks that came apart as large entities. They weren't cracked, so they must have just been bolted together. Steel windows and the frames that support them, and then of course the blast-resistant windows. Slide 6 takes a view of the wall. While the fire trucks are still there, it's the afternoon, and you can see the blocks. I've highlighted them. You can see the limestone spacing. You can see the bricks. You can see the steel window frames that the blast-resistant windows were inset into, and then the concrete wall remains that you see piled up below. And I hear people making noise. Could you go on mute, please?
Yes, please mute your phone. Star 6, and you can star 6 when you're ready to come back. Star 6, please, especially if you're breathing hard in the background. Okay, star 6.
Thank you, Ken. So slide 7 takes a look at the close-up of this material that's there, and you can see the very sharp-edged concrete blocks that had previously been part of the wall, but they've come down, and you can see them all throughout the rubble pile as well as the other parts of the wall. Slide 8 is the inside.
of them, of the walls, and you can see the how the windows were inset into them. And you can compare that to the exterior we saw on slides 6 and 7, showing that is the extent of the interior wall, absent the bricks and blocks that fell apart when the wall came apart. Slide 9 is a lot of text. I'm not going to go over it, but this is where they talk about the outer wall was reinforced with structural steel tubing to increase stability and provide support for the new blast-resistant windows, which are very heavy. I ran across a picture of a very poor quality. I can't say much about it, but slide 10 talks about the impacted wall crumbling. If you go and watch it at about 9:20, you can see the wall come down. So I'm going to skip really briefly over the next slide. This is the conflicting claims about the facade. Many people say it's 18 feet, some say 16, some say 20, some say 10. But in fact, when you actually take a look, slides 13 and 14, they just basically reiterate what most people know. I included it just for completeness. But when you get to slide 15, it's one of the other pictures that shows the entire length of the opening, and it's about 100 feet. Now, the rest of the presentation is going to go through looking at this in some level of detail. So going on to slide 17, we're going to talk about composite photographs. Everyone has seen some of these composite photographs. There's some accusation that they are, in fact, photoshopped, but any composite photograph is, by definition, a merger of multiple images. And the question about Photoshop is it an accurate, it may be an accurate term. It's neutral about the quality of the resulting information. Slide 18, the question is whether the composite actually reflects the original information or misrepresents it. And I think that largely the ones that we're going to be talking about largely represent the information. Slide 19, the assertions in the composite photos are that the opening is about 100 feet wide. And slide 20 shows how some of the composites were made, what images there were, and I'm not going to go into any detail on that. Slide 21 is the first composite image. It shows the 100-foot opening, and it shows that it's clear. There are, of course, things hanging down, especially at column 16 on the right. And then this one here happens to show two other columns on the left-hand side of the north end. There are no clear views during the event, and this particular photo appears to of the north end seems to have been merged in, and it has the wrong perspective, and it led me to think that the opening was only 80 feet, but in fact, that's really a side view, kind of stuck in this way, and it's really pretty much not a very good representation. Composite number 2 on slide 22 is kind of more appropriate looking at the north end, but all it shows is a lot of smoke, and there's, of course, an opening there. Slide 23 talks about the best evidence that supports an opening. It is a composite, and I've identified columns 9AA, which is the leftmost of the two. I've identified it. That is a column that is intact from the second floor to the concrete slab below, except that it's greatly arched. Slide 24 basically shows another side view, and maybe the source of the side view picture for the composite. But we were counting the columns. You can see for yourself where they are. I've highlighted the ones from columns 9 through 17 where the facade has fallen away. That's hopefully consistent throughout. Slide 25 is the ASCE report, American Society of Civil Engineers. They reviewed which columns were missing. And I'm only showing this here to highlight where column 9A and 9AA is. And if you go on mute again, that would be appreciated. Slide 26, we're going to start looking at the left side, the south side of the opening. The south side terminates at column 18, and column 15 to 17 have remnants hanging. Many people have claimed that the columns are intact at the bottom and, in fact, are leaning out as a result of explosions. but there is a wrong angle for such a for such an event. Multiple views that I'll talk about later show that they are in fact hanging. Slide 28 is the south end of the opening, and you can see column 16 is hanging from the top, and we're going to see it from a left side view a little bit later, showing that in fact that there's no doubt that it's hanging because it connects to the roof, the second floor at from multiple perspectives. Slide 29 is just a...
Wayne, let me interrupt you for just a second here. We're at the 10-minute mark, and if you wanted to leave any time for discussion, you would have to do so pretty quickly here, okay, because you only got five more minutes total, okay?
Okay, great. We'll try to get through this then. Then I'll just jump to slide 30, and this is where, when you actually look at the photos, you'll see that there's an opening and it's clearly visible from at least column 12 to column 18. It's open on the first floor for that distance. Slide 31 is a close-up of that. Slide 32 takes a look at this and highlights a few other interesting parts. I'll skip to slide 34 and just note that you can see some interior fires. I would need to say that. The going to the north end, and we go to slide 36, there's an opening in the facade from columns 8 to 13 that are clearly visible where the wall is absolutely missing. So that's a 36. 37 is a close-up. Barbara, in an email, has said that those things that are raggedy, pointy are rebar, but in fact, those are, in fact, the remnants of the tree that was used to be at column 16, just a few feet to the right.
That's an incorrect statement about what I said.
Okay, Barbara, you have to wait to make a comment. I'm sorry.
Right. And so I guess after that, I'm just going to jump to the hanging remnants of column 16. That's the slide 42. What I did in this next section here, which I guess I'm going to leave as an exercise for the students, is to actually take a look at the columns, remnants from 15 to 17 can't be emanating from the floor because they would intersect the floor under the midline of the windows, and so they can't be coming up from the floor because that's the wrong angle, that's the wrong junction point with the floor. And if you go through the slide from 45, 46, and going on, what you're going to see is that and I invite you to look at the original poor quality of the YouTube that show this, but you can actually see the column from multiple viewpoints, from this case here in the slide 47 from the left, in 48. You can see them. It's still attached, and this is a 45, at least 45 degrees angle difference from the other photos that we've seen, which I've turned into a composite on slide 50. I could go on and talk some more, but I'm going to leave it open. I'll open it for questions, Ken, and I want to ask you to keep the questions focused on the wall and the opening. Thanks.
They will be, but we're really running short on time. We have about 5 minutes to take for this, I think, and that means everybody needs to keep their comments or questions extremely brief. So who would like
Barbara?
To make a comment or a question that can do so in a very brief manner? Who would like to do
Barbara?
Craig. Who else?
Craig.
Who else?
Jim.
Adam. Craig. Adam. Who else?
Jim.
Jim? Jim Fetzer?
Yeah.
Okay. And who else?
Dennis.
Okay. So, Barbara, you first.
I think that was Dennis Cimino also.
Dennis? Is Dennis, did you say you want to make a comment?
Yeah.
Dennis? Okay. Gotcha, Dennis. All right. So, Barbara?
Okay. Well, I'm just seeing if I've sent my rebuttal to this PowerPoint slide set by email about an hour before this teleconference. I just refer everyone to it. It's a point-by-point rebuttal to the completely false interpretation of the video or the photographic evidence by Wayne. I'll just refer you to it. The bottom line is that the columns are clearly, you can see for yourself, I've given slide-by-slide numbers. They are bowed out, not in. In other words, from a large high-pressure explosion on the inside out, not an impact outside in. And the maximum continuous opening on the ground floor, which is not the important point anyway, is only 50 feet. But I refer you to my email. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. Craig?
No, so do I get to reply?
If you can be briefly, because we're almost out of time.
Yes,
we don't have much time for this.
Right, and on my slide 44, where I actually showed where the column would have aligned with, that seems to be absolutely refutes that they could possibly be coming up from the ground and bowed out because the angles are completely wrong. And the videos that I found have the angle column attached to the second floor from multiple angles. So I'll leave it at that. Next, Craig.
Okay, thank you. Craig, you're next.
Yeah, I just want to quickly say, first of all, that I don't know who all these people are who are claiming that it's a 16-foot, 18-foot hole, and that's the only hole in the Pentagon wall. We've had two very detailed debates on this subject, and I don't think anybody has said anything like that. So, and look, maybe you remember somebody saying it, but most people, I think, understand that we're dealing with an opening that is bigger than that on the ground floor, and that what they're talking about is up on the second floor. But I just have a quick question, and I hope this is not at all off topic, but given your view that this damage was created by a 757, Wayne, could you tell me where you feel the impact of the right engine was on the wall and the right wing?
Well, you know, it is not something I wanted to talk about, but I'll just say that based on the geometry that I had sent to you earlier this winter, that it would have been probably very close and brushing up to column 18, impacting column 17. Column 16 would have been protected to some extent by hitting and destroying the tree out in front. So that's the geometry. If you go to the hopeoutloud.org/Pentagon, you'll see the slides that describing my estimation for the impact that were part of the discussions earlier this winter. And if I'll leave it at that, and I invite you to further discussions about those. Thanks.
Over. Okay. Thank you. Okay. And Adam, you're next. Adam?
Hi. I'd just like to make a quick comment because Craig and Barbara kind of covered what I wanted to say. But I would just like to say that these points that Wayne has talked about today have been discussed ad nauseum in the truth movement since Thierry Mazin's book, La Penta Gate, which came out in 2001. So we've been over all this material ad nauseum, and I would just like to move on past it at this point. So that's all I had to say.
That doesn't need a console to fly, I guess. So thank you. And Jim Fetzer?
During my conversation with Major General Albert Stubblebine, formerly in charge of all U.S. military signals and photographic intelligence, reported in the Real Deal episode number 100, he agreed that all four of the crash sites had been fabricated or faked, albeit in different ways, including the Pentagon, and offered additional reasons for thinking so. More recently, in the Real Deal number 205, raising the smoke curtain on the Pentagon, Dennis Camino and I went through 2 hours discussing all of this in detail. There's no question that no Boeing 757 hit the Pentagon.
So Jim, I was sorry that you didn't ask the question about the wall, opening the wall.
Fair enough. So we just have to let that one go, okay? It's not directly connected with the wall hole. Right, so thank you, Jim and Dennis. Dennis Camino.
Is it my turn now, Dennis?
Yes, Dennis Camino. Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, we know that the engines on the alleged Boeing 757.
Could you speak up, please, Dennis?
Yes, we know that the engines were allegedly, you know, they're exactly 48 feet apart. I'd like to know where both engines impacted the wall, not just one, but both. And where's the wreckage? You know, where's the wreckage?
That's also outside of the question, so it's up to you if you want to respond to that or not. So.
No, thank you, Ken. I wanted to keep this focus on the 100-foot opening, and in response to Adam, I'll say if you think that the issue's been solved, that we should stop talking about it, then I think that we might want to think about taking a motion to take a look at the evidence, to take a motion to agree that there's a 100-foot opening in the wall. That would end the discussion.
Okay, so I think that we'll round out to this, and we're over time, of course. So thank you, Wayne, for your presentation, and everybody for your questions. And now we move on to America Nuked on 9/11, the new book edited by James Fetzer and his colleague. And Gene is here to talk about it, and so send it to me, I guess. So, Jim, floor is yours.
There are 28 chapters. The core is divided into 8 sections of 3 chapters each in reverse order. 9/11 limited hangouts, the myth of nanothermites, the 9/11 crash sites, the Pentagon, what didn't happen. New York was nuked on 9/11, what happened on 9/11? Who was responsible and why 2? Who was responsible and why 1? There's a preface and a prologue, an epilogue, and an afterword. The argumentative character of the book is well captured by contrast with architects and engineers who support, of course, nanothermite and Building 7. We agree, the evidence presented here confirms that Building 7 was taken down by controlled demolition, but that nanothermite cannot have been responsible for destroying the Twin Towers. The basic argument is as follows, that in order, it's a law of material science, that in order to destroy a material, an explosive must have a detonation velocity equal to or greater than the speed of sound in that material. The speed of sound in concrete is 320 meters per second, in steel 6,100 meters per second, but the highest attributed detonation velocity for nanothermite found in the scientific literature by G. Mark Hightower, a chemical engineer, is only 895 meters per second. Clearly, nanothermite can't cut it. When it comes to Judy Wood and Dews, they represent no planes and directed energy weapons. We agree about no planes, that there's ample evidence here to substantiate that all 4 of the crash sites were fabricated or faked, albeit in different ways. Interestingly, with regard to the notion of dews, because the way that Judy defines, they are sources of energy that provide far more than conventional and can be directed, which is true of many or micro nukes, which we substantiate, were used to blow up the buildings, destroy them from the top down in a very sophisticated arrangement. Well, the most important evidence, ironically, is dust studies conducted by the U.S. Geological Survey. 35 different locations in New York that presented discovered elements that would not have been present had this not been a nuclear event, including barium and strontium, thorium and uranium, lithium, lanthanum, yttrium, chromium, tritium. Plus, of course, there are nearly now 70,000 citizens and first responders who have suffered anomalies associated with exposure to ionizing radiation, including multiple myeloma, leukemia, esophageal, pancreatic, and other forms of cancer. So what we have, too, in this book, which I associate with scholars as the founder thereof, is an explanation not only of how it was done, but who was responsible and why, which seems to me to be the glaring inadequacy of the approaches of architects and engineers and of Judy Wood and Dews. They won't even talk about who is responsible and why, and their explanation of how is provably inadequate. The contributors include Ed Ward, M.D., Jeff Prager, Susan Lindtower, Preston James, Ph.D., Dennis Camino, Jack White, Nick Kohlerstrom, Ph.D., Mike Palachek, D. Mark Hightower, Jim Fetzer, Ph.D., Steve Forney, an aeronautical engineer, Joshua Blakeney, Don Fox. The book's available in a soft cover. It's 458 pages, 338 photos, at the more than nominal price of $20. I have suggested, by the way, that because it's detailed and focused and specific, this book might make an excellent target book for criticism and attack. We don't claim to be infallible, but I can guarantee you that every argument is well substantiated. There's abundant evidence. This book just bristles with legally admissible proof of what happened on 9/11.
Well, thanks, James, for a concise description that came in on time and under budget. How much did you say the book sells for again? And how can people get a hold of it?
Yeah, go to moonrockbooks.com, moonrockbooks.com. It's $20, 458 pages, 330 photos. It's very thorough, very detailed, meticulous, copious evidence, abundant arguments. I highly recommend that we adopt it as a target for future discussion to make everything focused and so we know what we're dealing with and can be very specific in refining our arguments.
Okay. Dennis, did you want to take a minute to say anything before we take questions? Dennis Cimino?
Actually, yeah, I just had to unmute. I wanted to be courteous and keep some background noise. I don't really have anything
Thank
to
you.
Add. He wrapped it pretty good.
Okay. Very good, then. Does anyone have a question for the book that they'd like
Pablo?
To ask? Jim?
Pablo?
I do, Barbara.
Pablo, Barbara, who else?
Wayne.
Adam.
Wayne, Adam, who else? Okay, Pablo, you first. Please make it short, everybody. Thank you.
Hey, Jim. My problem with the nuclear theory, either one of the micro or regular, is the spire. If the nukes had to be in the core, either under it or in it, and the spire shouldn't be there because they would have wiped it out first. So I'm not strongly holding any position, but that's my question.
Well, let me give you a model. They appear to be have been in place in the core columns directed upwards. If you were to take out a cube of 10 floors apiece per second, for example, in the North Tower, 110 floors, that would take 11 seconds. It was converting the material to very fine dust. The building was destroyed actually to or even below ground level. They had to do it in an unusual way to protect the bathtub, which was a kind of a moat within which the buildings were constructed. Had any substantial part of these 500,000-ton buildings hit the moat, you would have had massive flooding from the Hudson River beneath the most valuable property in the world, the subway tunnels, the fast train tunnels. They also had to coordinate the whole thing in terms of plane strikes with explosions that were set off in the sub-basements to take out the sprinkler systems, but that's an additional consideration. In the South Tower, because the top three cubes were tilted and blown as one, that would have taken 9 seconds. That corresponds with. And when you put together the rapidity of the destruction, the fact that we had the vaporization of 60 to 80,000 tons of steel, and that the building was destroyed so that there was no pile of debris we had with building 7, 47-story building, the typical 12%, 5.5 floors, with a 110-story building with more than twice. They were destroyed.
I think what he was asking about was, how do you explain this fire? How do you explain this fire being there? Okay.
Well, you mean the remaining part of the North Tower and the that turns to dust at the very end?
That's
just a residual effect of how it was done. I mean, by the way, it's blowing up from the top down, and it's in a sequence intended to simulate. But anyone who looked, I haven't put on the back cover, a photograph of the building blowing apart in every direction. No one should possibly mistake it for a collapse.
Well, I guess that's all we're going to get from that. Who's next? Barbara.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. I look forward to reading your book. I have a quick comment and then a question related to it. I agree with you that the World Trade Center Towers 1 and 2 collapses, because of the explosive nature of them, it's not sufficient nanothermite. But what I don't understand, if maybe you could clarify, is why does what Jim Hightower show in his paper that you've added to you've included in your book, in his chapter, why does that rule out nanothermite? I don't see how it would, because that's just what last clause.
Yeah, you mean Mark Hightower, not Jim. Yeah, Jim is an author.
I'm sorry, Mark Hightower, thank you.
No. The point is, yeah. Well, architects and engineers have sometimes argued, yes, it could have been combined with something else to make it explosive. The point I make is that's true of toothpaste. If you combine toothpaste, which is non-explosive, with something that's explosive, you can make it explosive. They've been talking about this for a long time. Mark Hightower and I published 3 articles demonstrating that nanothermite was insufficient in 2011, Barbara.
Yes, I agree with you, Jim. I started out by saying I agree with you on that. My question was, I needed one more clause to get it out. My question was, I don't believe that that argument can rule out nanothermite as a contributor because it's an incendiary. It cuts steel by heat, not by explosion, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. It also appears that the byproducts that are qualified as nanothermite appear to be the effects of the use of mini or micro nukes. There was a recent article from attributed to Russian sources that made that point. But I have no problem with saying that nanothermite may have made a contribution. I believe, for example, the cutting of the facades on the north and the south tower to simulate the strikes of aircraft may have been arranged by the gelatin group, these Israeli art students who were occupying the towers, to set it up that beneath the smoke that they use these little nanothermite charges to cut out the facade, very much along the line Richard Howe outlines in his 3D Flight 175 radar study.
Okay, well, thank you, because sometimes people misinterpret your position as being there was no nanothermite used at all in the World Trade Center 1 and 2, and that's not your position. Thank you.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, those tips appear to have, and that's the question is their origin and the function they play.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right, and Wayne, you next? Yeah, you know, I actually don't know where to quite begin, you know, because I'd like to first point out that I'll just point this out. Los Alamos National Labs, I have a document here that talks about mixing nanoparticles with effectively RDX, and that's what that's one of the things they market now. It's a red herring to basically say that I nanothermite was used alone. But when you get to the point, I want to go to the elements that you were talking about. You said that there's all these elements that should be there, but most of the people, as you know, don't know that there's all around the United States, there's on average, 2 parts per million of uranium everywhere else. Strontium, which is used in life, is the one element that stands out much higher. But that is used in that's the remnant of fluorescent tubes. Your analysis, and we told you this in the past, doesn't address the naturally occurring concentration of those elements. And that,
but of course it does, and you haven't. But of course it does, Wayne. You haven't even looked at the book. I mean, we're talking about quantities and correlations between these elements. It's established without any doubt in the book. This was a nuclear event, and your efforts to obfuscate that fact are unavailing.
But Tim and I went through a session with you and Don Fox about this and went through the evidence.
Take a look at the book. This is an excellent example of why I propose using the book as a target. You got 3 chapters there. Mark Hightower is a very scrupulous chemical engineer. He happens to work for NASA. I mentioned that as an aside because this work is not related to his work. I'm saying he's a chemical engineer of a very high degree of competence. And he, I'm sure, would be glad to participate in subsequent discussions were we to use this as a target book as I propose.
Okay, thank you. And then lastly, Adam. Hi. Well, I like Wayne, I don't know where to start either. I've heard so many things that are simply not true. The reason that they do controlled demolitions with explosives that are very, very carefully placed on each column is because they have to sever each column completely for the building to come down straight and level. Now, you can't just haphazardly place mini nukes or whatever in the basement and hope that the building is going to come down in any sort of a straight and level fashion, like a controlled demolition. So, and furthermore, there's no reason to use nukes. Everything that we saw could have been accomplished by explosives, along with nanothermite to assist.
I can't believe.
Also, the no plane argument is ridiculous, and it would require an hour or more for me to unravel all this disinformation.
Yeah. I can't believe this is such a thoughtless response. I already explained 60 to 80,000 tons of steel was vaporized. That can't be accounted for by any kinds of conventional explosive with or without nanothermite. The buildings were destroyed at the ground level. There was no pile of debris, no kind of collapse, no conventional.
Yes, there was.
There was a giant pile of debris,
and you can't possibly quantify
how much debris was there, Jim. I don't want to insult your intelligence, but you are responding in an incredibly thoughtless way to what I delineated here about the book. Now, I suggest get it. Let's use it as a target. We don't claim to be infallible, but I'm not impressed by the kinds of criticism that Wayne and Adam are advancing here.
Okay. Well, I think we're going to have to cut it off there because we're, again, running out of time. But thank you, Jim, for giving us the heads up on this new book. And people know now where they can get it, Moonrock Book, if you're interested. And it's about, what, $25, you said, or
$20?
$20. Okay. All right. Thank you, Jim and Dennis. All right. Cheryl Curtis has been patiently waiting for her turn, our new co-facilitator, and she's going to inform us about the brand new Congress. Cheryl?
Yeah. The reason I asked to put this on the agenda was because I think it could be useful to the 9/11 truth movement, and so I'll run through this really quickly, and then you can see what you think about that. But the brand new Congress was organized, I think, sometime back in April or May. They're mostly, it started by people from the Bernie campaign, but they really strongly want to reach across the aisle and pick in this movement issues that every American could get or, you know, could support. What they want to do is replace all of Congress in one fell swoop in 2018, so all of the House and the third of the senators that would be running up for re-election. And they're going to do this through this party, or they're not going to be a party, they're just a group called the Brand New Congress. And so they'll have, the candidates will campaign in a block, and they'll be known as, you know, Brand New Congress candidates. But they'll run through the primaries, and so if it's a Democratic district, they will run as a Democratic candidate. And if it's a strong Republican district, they'll run as a Republican in the primary to try and beat the incumbent. And then because it's the party they're with is the favored party, they're most likely to take the election in November. So that's their plan. And I went to a local meeting here. They're very well organized. They really thought this through. And they're a lot of young, really smart, motivated people. So I was really encouraged by what I saw. Now, they're going to get candidates by having the American people nominate people. They don't want anyone who's currently a candidate, in Congress, unless they're really good people who are doing the right thing, which we know most of our Congress people don't fit that, criteria. Some do, but most don't. So so we can nominate people to their to be running for Congress in our areas. They get vetted by the Brand New Congress, and they're looking for volunteers and people to be on these teams that do the vetting, that, you know, help build the platform. So I think we could be involved in that also, helping build the platform and, you know, maybe putting something in that we see that we would like. And here are just some of the things that they have outlined that all of their candidates will have to support. And one is to rebuild the economy, completely change our criminal justice system, guarantee a higher standard of living for everyone, become a 100% renewable energy society, remove the ability for wealthy individuals and corporations to influence politics, and then further the rights of people of color, women, and LGBTIQ people. So those are what they have up on their website right now, and they keep working on this. And I read that they're trying to work with policy wonks and figure out the best way to do the platform. And I did ask the local people when I went to the meeting if there's anything anti-war on the platform, and they said yes, that it was. So that's interesting. And nearly all the work is done by volunteers. They'll have a few paid people and more as 2018 rolls around to handle the finances and everything, but they're hoping to do it all with a lot of volunteers. When I last checked, they had raised $60,000, which was a month ago or so. So they're raising money already. I mean, they're really well organized.
Decisions are made by the different teams, so they have a research team, a platform team, and several other teams that I can't remember at the moment, a vetting team for the candidates. And as I said, they're not running as a third party. They're going to start by running their candidates through the whatever party is dominant in that district. And then if they lose, then they'll run as an independent if they lose the primary. So they've really thought that out. And so in a nutshell, that's sort of what they are, what their plan is. And I kind of got excited about it. Our Congress is, you know, terrible, and anything we could do to improve it would be great. And I think this could work because most Americans, I think, what does Congress have, a 10% approval rating. But how I think it could work for 9/11 Truth is, as I said, we could nominate 9/11 Truth candidates. And then we can also try to get on the platform committee and push our issues there. And we can also just join the local brand new Congress groups and educate them about 9/11. So I could see it working for us. And even if we don't get anywhere with the 9/11 piece, it would be really great to do this and show the power structure that, you know, we don't need them. So that's it. And any questions? Yes, Barbara.
Barbara, who else?
Adam,
who else?
Okay,
Barbara, you're first.
Yeah, well, I'd just like to go on record that I ran as a Bernie Sanders independent, didn't get on the ballot, but I'll definitely do this 2 years from now, so that's very exciting. But I do have a comment. The problem with, at least in California, in all of the congressional districts in California, there are 50 of them, I believe, that the election offices in each county require you to say before the primary what party or MPP, no party affiliation, that you run in. And if you lose in the primary, you don't get to run as an independent. You're out. Because it's an open primary. So that would be a problem in California. But here I would run as a Democrat for the brand new Congress, and I'll do it. Okay, then I think that's great, Barbara. And you should find someone locally who will nominate you and do that. I wouldn't wait until then. They're working right now. They've already got candidates. They're lining them up already. So I would get that right away if you want to do that.
And you learn who to contest by going to the website?
Yeah, the website is just brandnewcongress.org, and they have a thing there, a link across the top where it says nominate a candidate, and it tells you how to do it, and there's a blank there, so, yeah. But
okay.
I wouldn't wait, really. That's,
yeah.
Okay.
Great. Thanks. Pablo?
Yeah, my personal opinion is that the system is not reformable, that we have 545 billionaires. They're not going to let anything badly affect their influences, so this is hopeless. You cannot reform what's unreformable. We have 240 years of history in this country, and the rich have always gotten richer every year. The poor have always gotten more poor and more numerous. We've had 220 or so years of war out of 240. That they're unstoppable through voting processes.
Oh, I disagree. I like this idea. It needs to be tried.
Yes. Thank you for your comment, Pablo. Did you want to comment on this, Cheryl?
Yeah, it did come up at the meeting I went to. People asked them how are they going to respond to, the voting machine fraud and that. And they said that they were looking into that and they realized it's an issue. And at that moment, they didn't have any answer. But I do still think it's a good idea. It's worth trying. At least it shows them that we're, you know. And then if this fails, maybe the next step is revolution. Maybe people need to try one more thing before they get to that point. I don't know. But I agree it's an uphill battle, but I think it could work because people are really fed up. So.
Okay,
anyway.
Thank you, Cheryl. Yeah. Will, to you next. Thanks for the question.
Yeah, it really is a comment. I run for Congress the past three cycles as a write-in candidate using no money whatsoever. And I would say the major hurdle here is that we've got to go to the Federal Communications Committee, and make them very much like local cable TV, provide a free political advertising and issue advertising channels, outlets, all over the country, without taking the money out of the equation. I would say it's, you know, nigh on to hopeless. Worth trying, something to do if you're bored, but without taking the money out and having free access to the people's airwaves, we're not going to get very far.
Well, I want to just respond to that. I forgot to mention they're planning on taking in a lot of money and fundraising, and they will be distributing the money to the candidates, you know, based on the most need, and, you know, so you there will be money available for the candidates that they haven't had to go after themselves. So,
well, the point that I'm making
is
that...
I'd like everybody to know that I got on mainstream media here in Central Coast, California, big time for 3 months without any money.
That's right, Barbara, and you got 1,320-odd votes, I think.
I got a lot. I got over 2,500 votes.
Okay, and the winner had how many votes?
Well, the winner was Leon Panetta's son, James Panetta. It was a foregone conclusion. But what's beautiful about this proposal is that next time I run as a Democrat, there was only one Democrat, Jimmy Panetta, and I'll run against him next time on the brand new Congress.
Okay, thank you. Do you want to respond to anything to what Will said there?
I understand what you're saying, that we need to take the money out of Congress, but how do we do that? You know, they're not going to vote for it themselves, so perhaps if we can get a brand new Congress in, they'll vote for it, you know, so
well,
I don't
know. Well, that's why I suggest the FCC rather than Congress. You can have some leverage over the Federal Communications Commission that you would not have over Congress, because that would have them voting against their own interests.
Right.
Well, okay, I think, and then Adam?
Left. Hi, Cheryl, I think it's a great idea. I'd love to see it happen. I will vote for the candidates that are replacing our current crop that's in there. I'd be glad to get behind this effort 100%. The only caveat I would add is that I would hope that the platform includes a very strong support and effort by all the candidates to return to the Constitution of the United States. I think if you did that, you would get all the people on the right backing this as well. That's
right, and it's interesting they haven't mentioned that here, but they seem to be keeping their platform pretty closed at the moment. They have some ideas here what they're working on, but before you could see there was a platform team that you could ask to be on, and they've closed that down now on the website, so I don't know if they're getting some interference on that. But I agree with you. They need to. I think that would be a great idea. So I think, you know, we need to get involved, I think, with them and influence what they do. And if we can get 9/11, even if we don't, you know, talk about our 9/11 support, if we can get on and support all the other issues and then talk about our 9/11 issues, you know, or, you know, I think it would be great, because 9/11, you know, spans the political spectrum, people who are in the truth movement, so we fit their bill in that sense. So, anyway, thank you, everyone, for listening.
Yeah, thank you, Cheryl. Thank you for the presentation. Another arrow in our soul, maybe. Okay, then Pablo Novi, he's going to talk about his 9/11 Truth Unity Manifesto idea. Go ahead, Pablo.
Yeah, thank you. Before I forget, my personal opinion is that they dumped all kinds of different things at New York City, so we'd be completely confused about what really happened there. Hopefully everybody got this leaflet called End All the Wars and Police States Now. The focus of the thing is not to try to prove what's not our onus to prove, which is what did happen on 9/11, nukes or not, planes or not. Our onus is to prove that the U.S. government 9/11 official conspiracy theory is a lie, that the 9/11 was an inside job, false flag, big lie. And we can unite our movement. We can't unite around any of these sedition issues like planes or no, et cetera, but we can unite around that this was an inside job by Americans and others, false flag blamed on Arabs, and a big lie with a cover-up. And if we unite around that simple message, We can then take it as a unified force instead of having 100 different voices which confuse and demoralize the people. We can take a unified message to the billions of people on the planet. They'll get angry because it'll put the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle together. They will rise up and they will put an end to these wars and police states because nobody else can. And it's time to do that. It's time to stop squabbling amongst ourselves. And so I think that all our other priorities have to be on the back burner compared to this, because trying to figure out what actually happened, it might take us 50 years, and maybe if we set up some kind of an international commission and fund it publicly, we get there sooner.
But in the meantime, millions are being slaughtered and the police state is being forced down our throats. I would love the opportunity to address the conference in New York. I'm asking everybody to try to set up interviews with me on anything and everything to talk about this proposal. The leaflet is set up so that it's as memorizable as possible. So the three main categories are people, places, and instead of things, planes, because those were the things. Under people's mode of opportunity and means, under places, it's the three places. Under planes, it's pre-hijacking, actual hijacking, and approaches to the, wherever they're supposed to crash and the actual crashes. Then there's a bonus section about the Patriot Act and anthrax and the Afghan War. So I don't have the time to go over all this stuff, but the left-hand 35% or 40% is my version of what the government has been saying, what people believe is the version of the government. And so it's like 27 or 30 phrases. You can see them and say, oh, yeah, that's what the government says. And then each one is answered on the right, starting with the word yet. So, for example, the very first one about people and motives. Each Muslim, it says people, 19 specific men. Each Muslim religious fanatic wanted his 72 virgins. Yet, they drank, they drugged, they whored. They got fast-track visas, they had their IDs stolen, and 7-plus of them were alive afterwards. So that's how this whole thing is set up. I'd love to hear any and all criticisms and suggestions about improving the basic documents. I think that this is a game-changer, and nothing else that anybody has come up with can come close to this, because it's easily understandable by the people. It exposes what our job is, to expose the lie. And if people get pissed off because millions of people's lives have been lost over this lie. It will serve as a litmus test for everybody in the 9/11 truth movement and everybody who's not in it yet, because either you support exposing what we're supposed to do, which is the U.S. government version, or you're not really supporting 9/11 truth. So it will build unity amongst us that we have not even come close to doing. It will help keep out anybody that doesn't agree with it. Lastly, it's not about me at all. I'm the author of the thing, but if you see the fourth line on the thing, it says, by the uniting 9/11 truth movement in the name of the people of the U.S. and the world. The first line is end all the wars and police states now. The second line is make the U.S. billionaires pay total reparations for all the damage done. The third line, 9/11 was an inside job by Americans and possibly others. False flag blamed on Arabs. And big lie was with a cover-up. So that's my presentation.
Pablo? Okay, who would like to be on the list to ask a question or make a comment? I have David Fletcher here as well.
James.
James. Who else?
Jim.
Ed Jim. Fletcher?
Jim.
Who else?
Spencer.
I have Jim. Who else?
Cheryl.
Cheryl, who else?
Ed Jim.
Ed Jim,
someone's
who else?
Got a speakerphone or something. It's horrible echo.
Yeah, there's definitely some bad background noise coming in.
Someone
who
on a speakerphone can get on a regular handset would be smart, please.
Yeah, that would help. Okay, who else would like to be on the stack to make a comment or ask a question? I'll put myself
Adam.
On the stack. Adam behind me. Who else? Okay, so I have David, Barbara, James, Jim Fetzer, Cheryl, Ed Jewett, myself, and Adam. Anybody else? Okay, try to keep your comment or your question very brief, and Pablo, please keep your response as brief, okay? Thank you. David, you're first.
Thanks. I'm hoping, Pablo, I can have a telephone conversation with you at some point. I do like the leaflet. There's a lot really, really good things about it, but I support solidarity, which this call is an example of, more than I do unity. Unity in politics usually means you do what the leadership says or you get stomped.
Okay. You want to respond to that, Pavel?
Yeah, I'm sorry, but I don't see any big difference at all. Solidarity, unity. I use the word unity.
There is a big difference. I'll be happy to talk to you about it.
Sure, I'm available.
What's your number?
Probably it's best through something like Skype.
Skype moniker.
Pablo Novi.
Yep.
Okay, you're where?
I'm in Mexico City, so people have a real difficulty calling
good.
Me.
Okay, I have Skype. Very good. What?
Okay.
I can get your email from just looking at the list, or what? How do I get his email?
Should be on there.
Well,
yeah, for an email
you know,
that
Pablo,
he sent.
Pablo, you know, David, Pablo has sent emails to the list, so you can.
Very good. That's good now. That's good now.
Okay, thank you. All right, Barbara, you're next.
Thank you, Pablo. Two comments, really, and then your comment on my comments. When you are satisfied with your glider, or whatever you want to call it, I recommend getting it to someone who can actually have it distributed at the New York conference. That's number one. Probably the best would be Les Jamison, but if you want to get it to me, I'll be happy to make copies and take it. So that's number one. Number two, I love your suggestion. I actually think that it's a good idea, but it makes me wonder if we shouldn't have a new name for this effort and call it something like the 9/11 Official Lie Movement, or the 9/11 Lie Movement. I like the 9/11 Official Lie Movement, to have a whole new frame for it. That's my comment.
You want to respond to that, Pablo?
Barbara, I really respect your work. People may not know, but I did a line-by-line critique of Barbara's Behind the Smoke Screen, and at least at that time she really liked it. I don't know if she still does. I think it's I am 100% with you. My preference would be you. You're the one that I know is going to the conference who I have the most confidence in distributing copies. Fly away with it, friends. In terms of changing the name of the group, I don't know. I'm open to that possibility. I think there's an advantage to 9/11 Truth Movement because we've been identified as that. Calling it the something lie is like you'd have to put in the word exposing, and then it gets a little complicated. But I'm open to that.
I didn't mean to rename the group, just to rename the name the campaign something like the 9/11 Official Lie Movement. Exposing the 9/11 Official Lie Movement. It might have been a mistake to call ourselves the 9/11 Truth Movement because that opens the door to bobbling about what actually happened instead of just focusing on what didn't.
Well, maybe the two of you could have a side discussion on that and I'll work out a possible amendment to the title. James, you're next.
Well, I don't want to be negative about this, but I'd like to point out that quite a few of us have been saying, making your point, the same point for several years, and the real fly in it is that you're not going to be able to muzzle people from bringing up all the side arguments and everything. So don't think that's going to happen. But I'm not sure that let them happen. I mean, let them happen alongside this central thrust that you're talking about, and it might be okay.
Okay.
50 years ago, I was working 40 hours a week for 10 years to stop the war in Vietnam. I was in San Diego. We had a thing called the San Diego Convention Coalition. We met once a month. There were 350 activists on average at each meeting, representing 50 organizations just in San Diego. We had a common petition and a common call out now, and yet we raised money and supported 50 different projects. So it was not a matter of trying to silence everybody. It was just saying, hey, let's put this first.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And if I could suggest a possible name to consider, how about Stop the 9/11 Lie?
Right. My personal preference is the title, End All the Wars and Please States Now, but let's look into it. Let's discuss it some more.
Okay. Very good. Okay, thank you. And Jim Fester?
Well, just to draw an academic analogy, I mean, what Bob was proposing is an introduction to 9/11 research. It's very appropriate. Years ago, I published a piece entitled 20 Reasons the Official Account of 9/11 is Wrong. But we want to go from there and move to explain what actually did happen in pursuit of the truth, the whole truth, and nothing like but the truth. So you could proceed from a Pablo position to architects and engineers that kind of 9/11 like Judy Wood, Planes, No Planes, and eventually work your way up to me and Micro Nukes, which with the book I'm offering here as a target is like a graduate level seminar to attack. And because it's thorough, detailed, and meticulous, it's a suitable subject for criticism. But I applaud your effort, Pablo. You're obviously very sincere, and I think it's a good way to approach those who know next to nothing about 9/11 and want to learn more.
Okay, thank you, Jeff.
Can I respond to that? Can I respond to that?
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
I'd love to get on your program again, Jim. Thank you very much for the compliments and the suggestions. The whole idea of this thing is to have a base from which all the other ideas that we may not agree about, people will be listening because basic exposure of what the government says is so clear, it's so crystal clear, it opens the door for everything else.
Well, Pablo, everyone here would agree with everything you have on your list. It's just a matter of knowing what actually did happen, how it was done, who was responsible, and why. And for that, you have to go far beyond the issues you've raised. Although they're completely accurate and demonstrate the official account proposed by the government is provably false in virtually every single respect.
Pablo, we can't go on and on with this. I'm sorry. We have to give other people a chance, okay? So I think, you know, you and Jim have finished that part, okay? Cheryl, please.
Pablo, I just wanted to thank you for what you've done here. I think it's really a great idea, and it would stop the in-house fighting, which, you know, it's one thing to debate the issues between ourselves, but when it kind of spills over and we're not really putting out there the basics that we need the public to know, you know, we're kind of doing a disservice to ourselves. So I think this is really good. I think it would be a good idea in order to get some momentum around it if we created or you created something, some kind of a team or a committee to work on this, so it's not just you doing it, and that's just a suggestion to make it broader and have more people involved.
I completely agree with that. I was hoping to get an endorsement from this group, this conference, set up, you know, get representatives from whoever wants to participate in this, make it an organization, and then try to get what was the word I just used? Try to get group after group to say, yeah, we're on board with this project. The other thing I'd just say is that the leaflet is written specifically to avoid all the controversies that are dividing us and still nail the government.
Thank you. Okay.
Yeah,
and Ed, Jewett?
Hi. Ladies and gentlemen, first of all, I want to just say thanks to you all and the work and so on. I'm new. I don't participate in these very often, but I got to make one comment. I'll keep it short, and Ken, I'll write it up for the future. That's how short this will be. I think you've all been ooloo-looped, or to use a different phrase from a different war, I think you're trying to hold a Maginot line while the troops are already in Paris. I say that for a reason, and I'll ask a question, and as I say, I'll write this all up. There is an individual who's relatively well-known, who was one of the first 9/11 truthers. Her name is Catherine Austin Fitz. She has written recently about a number of topics, she and others, Joseph Farrell and probably three or four others, books and articles and videos and so on, about the space-based economy or the deep state covert budget, which is deeply involved in a number of categories that have to do with space, space warfare, deep space exploration, and transhumanism. And what I have recently discovered is a wonderful phrase that is used called the GRIN technologies, G-R-I-N. It's an acronym.
Excuse me for interrupting you. Your question has to be pertinent to this question of this manifesto that he's written up. Okay.
It's a comment, not a question. And as I say, I think it's too little, too late.
Okay.
I think you're 10 years behind the times, and there's other things that are underway.
Okay,
like I said, I'll write it up for you, and I'll stop there.
Okay, thank you. Did you need to respond to that, Pablo?
Yeah. In one sentence, this has never been tried by our movement as a whole, and that's why it has had no chance to succeed. Whatever we do in the future, I'm interested in your ideas.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Okay, my turn. I originally wasn't that thrilled by Pablo's proposal. Not that I don't think it's a good proposal, but just that I don't think it will lend the impetus to the 9/11 truth movement that he thinks it will. But on second thought, I realized that it would have a value in a different way, in a what we might call a defensive way, and he used the term litmus test. And I think that it would be useful for the 9/11 truth movement to sign on to a set of beliefs about what's wrong with the official story, such that those who then come later, by way of Cass Sunstein or anybody else, to tell us that certain things are in fact the case, that we believe were not the case, would automatically have the burden of proof heavily placed on their shoulders, and give us something to use as, you know, I think Pablo has appropriately used the term litmus test. So I do see a value in that respect, not so much in the way that he's basically promoting it, but in that respect, I think it might have value. Okay, you don't need to respond to that, Pablo. I just wanted to make that comment. So Adam, you're next.
Hi, Pablo. This is Adam Ross. We've had a little discussion back and forth on the listservs. I really like the spirit and your idea, but the problem is not so much, this is my view, the problem is not so much that the public isn't informed, the problem is the public doesn't want to be informed.
Amen.
That's the real problem, and that's why this particular approach doesn't address the real root of the real problem. That's my only comment.
My response to that is that if you live in any of the dozen countries that's being bombed back to the Stone Age, there's nothing more important in understanding this. If you live in the United States and the police state is clamped down, if you're black and one black every 40 hours is being killed by the police, this is pertinent. So I suggest that the reason it hasn't happened is because it just hasn't been tried. We've been sending out 100 different messages. If we all take the same message, people will listen. When you send out mixed messages, people give up on it.
Okay, thank you. Let me just take this opportunity once again to encourage everybody to check out that film on Colorado Public Television Station, Demolition of Truth. It deals directly with the very issue that Adam has just raised. It's all about the psychological resistance that people face in recognizing 9/11 truth. And it's much better than anything that's been done on the subject, okay? So I would just really urge you all to take a good look at it. So finally, David Schlesinger has 1 minute to tell us why we might be able to, well, why don't you just take the floor, David? You know what you want to say.
Okay, thanks. What I'm considering is the charges the AE has encrusted bureaucracy. Their wonderful research that I do support does not need a paid staff. Now, if you want to be effective in persuading me not to take action to deal with this, rather than dismiss what I'm saying as some personal problem, I urge you to actually address the assertions that I'm raising, such as answer the question yourself. What percentage of the wonderful preparations this year and last year that were sent out to civil engineers unsolicited were opened or read? Secondly, I charge Kelly David, the COO of AE, with being a police agent, or at least indistinguishable from. Now, since there appears to be no venue for addressing this, what else can I do? Thirdly, they operate first as a business rather than trying to build a movement. Fourth, they did fraud in fundraising. Fifth, they're hostile to volunteers. I do prefer phone conversation, but I will deal with email. My phone is 410-499-5403. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, David. Does anybody feel a need to make a quick response, or can we move on to the announcement?
Can you repeat the phone number?
I have a question and an announcement, and I'd like to comment.
David,
I have a comment.
The phone number, please.
410-499-5403. 410-499-5403.
Okay. Barbara wants to make a quick comment. Who else had a quick comment?
Jim.
Cheryl.
Jim.
Jim Fetzer, Cheryl, and myself. Okay. Go ahead, Barbara.
Okay, and I also have an announcement, as you know, Ken, after that.
Well, the announcement will be after this. Okay.
Yeah, Craig as well, Ken. I had my mute on. I kept trying to say Craig, and nobody could hear me.
Craig?
Yes, I'd like to make a comment also. Okay. I just was on mute.
Barbara, go ahead.
Yeah, okay. I have an announcement after this segment. My question to you, Dave, is you have made a very serious charge that Architects and Engineers has fraudulent fundraising. You have never given any claimed evidence. Can you give even one example of that now?
Yeah, sure. I have a personal friend who was supposed to be doing fundraising over the phone, and they told her she had to lie and tell people that she wasn't being paid when they had intention of paying her. They said she was going to be paid. Secondly, when they, at the end of last year, when they said, pay $15 and we'll send a copy of Beyond Information to your local library, they didn't even ask which library. Richard's response to my email recently admitted that they hadn't ever gotten around to it. And I'll bet we cannot find one library in the United States that has this publication. Why are you speaking over me? I'm trying to answer the question.
I wasn't speaking over you.
Somebody was. I don't know who was.
Okay, so...
Okay, thanks for the example.
Yeah, thank you.
Excuse me?
She was thanking you for your example, baby.
Great,
okay,
thanks
now,
so much.
The next one is, I can't even read my own writing here. Oh, Jim Prentice, I'm sorry. Jim?
Yeah, I think you're making a lot of excellent points. We have a discussion about Architects and Engineers in the section of American News on 9/11. 9/11 limited hangouts. It's very clear they siphoned up a huge amount of money. They made a big to-do about Building 7, than which nothing could be more obvious. They've offered us nanothermite, but they haven't explained how it was done. I by and large, agree with you 100%. We have a chapter from Steve Farney, who was an architect and engineer activist in San Diego, explaining how they could not even talk about anything the nanothermite without being severely reprimanded and very heavy-handed, totally unscientific in their approach, actually a limited hangout in a very classic sense.
Okay, thank you, Jim. Cheryl?
You know what? I'm not going to make a comment. I'll pass.
Okay. My comment is that I have invited David, based on his allegations, to put together a PowerPoint or some other sort of distributable listing of his of the facts regarding these allegations so that people could take a look at them, and then he could make a presentation here. But he's declined to do that to this point. But I think that's the only way in which you could use this place as a forum, David, is if you wanted to make a solid presentation based on facts that you're willing to present and give people an opportunity to debate. Okay? Thank you.
I will reconsider.
The last person is Craig. Craig.
Yeah, I really hope that we don't deal with this subject again. We've now dealt with it several times. And I just have to say I was outraged by the comment about Kelly David at AE. I trust that you can prove what you said, and if you can't, perhaps you would withdraw that statement.
I'd be happy to discuss it at length. I'm preparing a piece for somebody else right now.
Well, you've just accused her of being a police agent.
I can show dishonesty, which is very unusual in an altruistic movement.
Well,
she does have a degree in criminal justice.
No, David, dishonesty is not the same thing as being a police agent.
I understand. Absolutely.
Well, then sounds like you should just withdraw that statement.
I'm not going to withdraw it. I'm going to say it even more than I ever have before. And I'm happy to talk about the detail.
All right. Yeah.
All right, thank you.
I would say that you should depose yourself, David. Do an affidavit. Do a deposition that you swear to, and bring a legal action for fraud.
Well, I don't go to court, but I don't mind doing something like that. I'm willing. Who is this speaking?
This is Bill.
All right. Well, I'll, can you call me and we can discuss this?
It's not my cup of tea, dude.
Fine. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. All right, so thank you. Okay, so we're done with that item, and now we move on to announcements. Barbara said she had one. Does anybody else have an announcement?
I have one. Cheryl.
Cheryl, and who else?
Pablo.
Craig.
Will.
Pablo, and who else? Craig.
Will.
Craig.
Will. I got you, Craig. So Barbara, Cheryl, Pablo, and Craig. Anybody else with an announcement? Okay, Barbara, you're first.
Okay, thank you. Very briefly, after an email thread with Ken, which by Ken Freeland, which I appreciate, Ken made it clear that I should make this as an offer because we don't have someone on the other side yet, but I am making an offer to debate with any individual in the movement. The proposition, quote, a plane was destroyed at the Pentagon with no flyover of that plane, close quote. So if anyone, I wouldn't be able to do it in September's call because of all the preparations and still dealing with a forest fire not too far from my home, but I could in October, November, December, etc. So I'm making that offer. A plane was destroyed at the Pentagon with no flyover of that plane, which is the only proposition that can distinguish between Craig and Adam and Sid's position and mine. And if anyone is interested, please email Ken and I, and we will go from there and try to discuss it on the next call. Thank you.
Okay, so that needs to go to the minutes. That is an open offer for a debate. And the next one is Cheryl.
Yeah, just for people who are maybe heading to New York to the two-day conference, just on Friday night, the 9th, Christopher Bowen will be speaking at the West Park Presbyterian Church at 7 p.m. So if anyone's interested.
Okay.
Cheryl, isn't he also on the 8th in Brooklyn?
He's going to be in Hartford on the 8th and in Brooklyn on the 7th.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep.
Okay. And Pablo.
Yeah. Ken, I have a question. Can we get a vote for an endorsement of the leaflet? And I still have an announcement, but we didn't make a decision or anything.
Well, you were supposed to do that in the course of your presentation before it was closed out, but since you didn't understand that,
yeah.
I don't recall you making that motion.
I didn't make a motion, but he asked for it.
Yeah.
Okay, well then in that case, I was remiss if I didn't hear you make a motion for not allowing it to be made. So I will therefore ask that we allow the motion to be made out of the sequence. And Pablo, would you care to make your motion, and we'll see if it gets a second.
I don't know exactly how the phrasing goes, but I'm hoping that this 9/11 teleconference endorses the End All the Wars and Police States Now leaflet and tries to rally other organizations around it.
Okay, so the proposal, the motion is by Pablo that the 9/11 Truth Teleconference endorse his pamphlet that was, or the leaflet that was distributed with the agenda. And agrees to help organize locally in support of it. Is that correct, Pablo?
Internationally.
Internationally. Okay. All right.
Can I make a question or a suggestion here?
No, first we have to see
okay.
if there's a second. Is there a second? Does anybody want to second the motion?
Sure, I'll second it.
Okay, the motion has been made and seconded. Now it's in order to do anything else. You want to be on the stack, Cheryl? Who else would like to be on the stack to this motion?
Barbara,
who else? Okay, Cheryl, you're first.
Yeah, I would like to suggest that we postpone this until the next meeting because I'd really like to look it over more in detail, and I haven't had a chance to do that yet. And if I'm the only one, then okay, then you know. But I think maybe there's others.
Okay.
The same
is there a second? Is there a second?
I second
Cheryl's
that.
Motion to postpone till the next teleconference the question of endorsement.
I second that.
It's been seconded, moved and seconded. All in favor of
postponement to the next teleconference, say aye.
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 All opposed, say nay.
Nay.
Okay, so the this question will be on the agenda for next teleconference to be discussed as an endorsement, according to the language that we've used on this one. So that has to be in the minutes. And we will move now on to the last of the announcements, and that would be, if I can read my writing.
I still have my announcements.
Oh, I'm sorry. You had an announcement in addition to that. Okay, go ahead, yeah. Pablo.
Okay,
go ahead.
I was the director of the 9/11 crash test project that Steve Dayak originally thought of for 9 months. I've been out of it for a little over a year. I've not reported because I felt like I didn't want to risk more disunity in the movement. What happened is we had a number of disagreements, but basically it came down to he didn't like that I wasn't working more than the 40 hours, 60 hours a week I was working on it. Since I was dumped about the first year, nothing was done, but he's still working on it. So I have the responsibility to report on the status of that thing.
Okay. Could I ask you, Pablo, were you being paid for that?
No, it was all volunteer.
Thank you. Okay. And anybody else want to make... I'm sorry. The last one is Craig. Craig, enough.
Yeah, I just wanted to make my own remark about the debate idea, and that, you know, what we would be willing to do, and this, you can take this as an offer as well, given the fact that there's some question has been raised about the fact that there were two of us that were part of the agreement that was made several months ago to debate. If anybody finds that to be unfair, then the person, whether it's Barbara or someone else who would like to debate the subject, could take on a partner, and then it would be two against two, and then it would be completely fair. So we would be in favor of that. As for the question, a plane was destroyed at the Pentagon, seems like the question that we have basically been working on, or a variation of that one, for months now, and so the idea of adding something in about the flyover is an absolute non-starter. So, you know, a plane was destroyed at the Pentagon would be an appropriate question, and if Barbara or anyone else would like to have a partner and debate two against two, we would be fine with that.
Why do we need to have two? Why not just one against one, like all the others?
Because two of us worked on this in good faith for 6 months, and only after 6 months did you decide that it was only going to be one against one, which we don't think is right.
Okay, this is only a time for announcement.
Okay,
so apparently...
So all right, now just a minute. We seem to have the
No, Barbara, no. There's no... This is an announcement time. So, Craig, I understand that you're announcing your willingness to debate the question of the original question, but that's actually a tabled item, okay?
It's not the original question, Ken. It's not the original question.
I'm sorry. Okay,
no.
Then would you repeat it? Repeat it for the record, please.
Yeah, this is the question I understood that Barbara was asking for last month. So we were prepared to agree with that request, and now it's changed again.
Oh, okay. Okay.
A plane was destroyed
okay.
at the Pentagon is
see,
the question.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you and Craig
are... I agree to either debate both of them, or if I can have a partner, I will, but it would have to be not until the October or November.
Are you willing to debate the question of just a plane was destroyed at the Pentagon, Barbara, without the other part?
Yes, although I will bring it in, but it doesn't need to be part of the proposition.
Okay.
Well, all right, so it sounds like we have a potential debate. That I guess we'll all be talking about this, the four of us, by email, and we'll see where we can go with it, okay?
Okay.
Right.
All right. So, thank you. I think that closes out our announcement section and finishes up the debate. I want to thank everyone for your patience. I want to thank everyone for your patience tonight. It's been a very long, hour extra long teleconference, but thank you for your patience and your responsible behavior, and I will see you all for the last Wednesday of September.
This is Wayne. Thank you for being such a good moderator.
Oh, well, thank you, Wayne. I appreciate the compliment.
Here.
Thank you. Okay.
See
you all in September.
And thank you,
thank
everyone.
You.
Everybody,
bye.
Good luck in you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay.